Glenn Brockett with Pioneer 90.1 FM with this very special interview. My guest today was the lead vocalist of one of the more obscure yet influential musical acts of the 1960s, The Monks, who since their disbanding in 1967 have garnered a strange yet delightful following of fans. Aside from The Monks, he's continued to make music and can currently be referred to as Mayor of Turtle River, Minnesota. From pre-punk Monk to politics, it's been an interesting journey for our guest today, Mr. Gary Berger. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thanks for having me.
And the impact the music of the Monks has had on other musicians, not too bad for a group whose record wasn't originally released in the States.
That's correct. There was a lot of incentive and a lot of work by our European record company to get us released in the States. But the bottom line is that we were a little too raucous, I think, for the American record companies in those days. And so that never happened. But, in the meantime, the band more or less died in about 1967. You know, we split up and went our own ways in disgust and dishevelment, if you will. We came back to the States. We got on with our lives. We all went to different parts of the country and worked and lived and spent our life raising kids, getting married like the average citizen. It was a difficult process turning back into an American after, the 7-8 years we spent in Germany. Mm-hmm. And we felt more, I don't want to say German, but we certainly didn't feel like Americans when we got back. It was just a strange time of transition for us to turn into Americans again. We were all speaking German more than we were speaking English. Mm-hmm. The dress styles and the attitude you cop. I guess we started thinking of ourselves even though we didn't know we were doing that as more international people than we were Americans, or certainly not Germans. We never did make that leap, but it was just a tough time. And then in the 90s, early 90s or so, you know, the monks had faded away, but in the early 90s, the record collectors worldwide started spending way too much money for monk vinyl albums. We started to get calls about, hey, are you guys ever going to play again? And in the beginning, we said no, but the calls kept coming, and one fellow in particular from New York City said, hey, I'm going to do this. I want you to come out and play these shows for me. So, the cut to the quick of it, we did. Got great reviews in New York Times and among other publications. And after that, we regrouped and went to Las Vegas. We went to Spain. Another trip included London and Austria, a little beautiful little town called Krems that has an annual rock concert every year, Berlin and Frankfurt. We were totally blown away by the fans, it turned out. You know, we didn't have very good fans in 1966, meaning that they didn't know what we were playing. And to us, it was rock and roll, but to them, it was something pretty strange. And it was loud, it was raucous. The lead singer was doing a lot of yelling and singing here and there, but a lot of loud noises were coming out of this band. And frankly, we weren't very successful playing live in Germany. So when we returned just a few years ago, we were astonished at the size of rooms. We were filling rooms that had seats of 1,500 people, and they'd pack them to the roofs and have more people clamoring to get in. And you look out at the audience as you're playing, and the age groups were as old as 70, 75 years old, down to 14, 13. So when we looked at that, the audience age depth, if you will, it was a shock and astonishing to us to see that so many people loved the monks, and they welcomed us with open arms. It was quite an experience. You know, the record collectors are still after our records, and if you can find those original vinyls, hey, hang on to them. They're worth something. The album itself, if it's pristine, not beaten, dog-eared, is worth probably $1,000. A poor one might be a couple hundred bucks, but they're all worth something. So if you got any out there in Radio Land, hey, why don't you send them to me?
Pink-a-lot, let's do it!
And you guys were even the topic of a documentary, too. I mean, Monk's Mania was starting to really catch on here in the last past 15, 20 years.
There was actually a documentary has been made. Dietmar and Lucia Post out of Berlin produced that. And they went to the trouble of traveling to this country, visiting each of us in our present homes, and interviewing us at length on videotape. So they took those tapes back, and eventually from that and from other sources, other people who were rocking at the time, interviews with those folks, they drew this image and picture of what the Monks were like in the mid-60s. So, and I think they did a really terrific job. They're talented filmmakers, and they did a nice job on it. That film played for a long time on the Sundance Channel. And I don't know if it's still there or not. I've seen it a couple of times, and you know, when you're looking at yourself, a couple of times is one time too many. But they did a good job.
Mm-hmm.
But it's tough to sit and look at yourself. That is for me.
Let's now talk about the Monk story and those early pre-Monks days when you guys were playing gigs in a band that had more of a poppier sound. And how did that transition from that poppier sound into what became the signature Monk sound take place, and how was it received?
We were all GIs in the American Army stationed outside of Frankfurt, Germany, in a little town called Gelnhausen. We'd formed this band in the Army with the five guys that eventually became the Monks, and we were playing German bars and nightclubs, and we were also playing for the U.S. Army in hospitals and rest homes and on the German economy, and it was a goodwill gesture from 3rd Armored Division to the people in our neighborhood. Whether our will was good, I think we were, but in any event, that was a large group that did that. We had four singers. That's all they did was three black guys, great singers, and one Spanish kid. And man, they do this doo-doo-doo-wop stuff like you've never heard. You know, their harmonies were fabulous. And we basically backed them. We didn't sing. Cutting to the quick of it, we figured out that we all got discharges within about, from the Army, within about 60 days of each other. So we're all getting out of the service at roughly the same time. So somebody had the bright idea, hey, why don't we stay here in Germany and play rock and roll music for 6 months or so? And a year was our limit, because if we went home within a year out of discharge, the U.S. Army would pay our way back. They'd put us on a flight or a boat and send us back to the States, no cost. So we contacted a German booking agent out of Frankfurt. He came out and listened to us. He was a terribly nice guy. His name was Hans Reich. He's now passed away for many years, but he was a great guy, and he was a heck of a booker. He came out and listened to us, and he says, I'll call you back in a week or two. He called me back in a week. He said, well, I got you booked for the next year and a half, 2 years. And I said, well, Hans, I'll tell you what. We'll do what we can, but when we're done, we're going to walk. And he said, well, that's all right. That's all right. But I got you booked for that amount of time. If you can play it all, great. If not, well, so it goes. Well, it turned out, you know, we stayed something like 4 years. And after we went out to the service, out of the Army, we called ourselves the Torquays. And we were your typical long-haired rock and roll band of that era. And by long hair, I mean, look at the Beatles in 1966, 67, 65. That's what we look like. What, not super long hair, was sort of sweet long hair for the times. You know, long hair really came in later. But, I mean, the real long hair. Anyway, enough about hair. We played in German nightclubs playing typical American and British rock cover tunes. We play Beatles, we play Rolling Stones, we play American artists like Rufus Thomas, Chuck Berry, a little bit of Beach Boys. They were going strong at that time, and that sort of thing. And we were very successful at it. We had a good, we turned out we could sing. We didn't find that out until we got out of the Army, when we had to leave those singing boys behind us. But it turned out we could sing well enough to get by. And so we had a very good run in German nightclubs for approximately a year. During that time, we were writing songs, and we knew that if we're going to do this for any length of time, we might as well try to get a recording contract. So you don't do that by playing Beatles songs or Chuck Berry songs. You do that by writing your own songs and then shopping it to record companies. So we cut a little record. One song was called Boys Are Boys, and the flip side of that 45 RPM was called There She Walks. And we did that in a little studio in Heidelberg, Germany. Heidelberg was our favorite town. They had a great club there called the Odeon Keller. And we'd play 30 days at a time in one club. And we'd play from 8 in the evening until 3 in the morning. So it's a 7-hour stint. And we'd play six days, typically 7 days a week, matinees on Sunday. Long days, long, long days. We recorded this single while we were in that town. Nobody liked it. it wasn't very impactful. It didn't have much impact. And when I listen to it today, I have to chuckle, because it was a pretty naive attempt to break into the record business. But it was a great experience.
Boys are girls are joys. Here's something you gotta know.
Germany, and these two fellows walk in, and they watch us for almost all night, and then they walk out. Next night they're back, and then they leave. Next night they are back, and they approach us, and they say, we have some ideas. We wonder if you'd be interested in sitting down and talking to us. Well, their idea was the monks. We were a little skeptical. We didn't know at that time that we're going to have to shave our heads. We didn't know in order to conform to their idea. And they had some musical ideas, too. Adding the banjo was one of their musical ideas, which turned out to be a brilliant bit of inspiration. Not the banjo in the common sense, but Dave Day played it with a flat pick. It was a six-string banjo that tuned and played similar to a guitar. But the sound it made was actually melded into the drum set. So you'd have this clackety-clackety-clack that the banjo's making going in with the boom-ta, boom-ta that Roger, the drummer, was producing. And it was fabulous, and I started using feedback, and we started writing more songs and developing ideas that the managers would come with us to us with. And pretty soon we had 10, 12 songs that they said, all right, now let's take this into the studio, record this as a demo, and we'll shop it around to the record companies. We did that. We went into the studio, recorded this demo in one day, and of 10 songs, and they started shopping it around to the different European record companies. They got a lot of no's, a lot of, this is ugly, this is awful. And then they met up with a fellow that worked for Polydor Records, a division of Deutsche Grammophon, whose name was Jimmy Bovine. Jimmy heard it, said, hey, this is weird. This deserves to be heard. And he convinced Polydor to sign us. So they did. We went into the Polydor studios in Cologne, Germany, and we recorded the entire album in 2 days. And I think it was a 12-song shot that we did for them. And they released it, much to the dismay of the public.
Do you know why I hate you, baby? How do you know?
We started playing with some bigger acts at that time. We played with, in order to promote this record, we had a good booking agent, a different agency, and we started playing with the Kinks, the Troggs, nice. The Manfred Mann, and we had a gig or so with Jimi Hendrix and the Experience. And there were some others, too, who escaped my attention at this moment. But we started playing to larger audiences, and invariably they thought that, they thought basically that this is something they really didn't need to hear. The Monks were anti-war, Vietnam, we're talking here, kiddies. We had three songs that were very strong about that war in particular. You know, hindsight now, I'm... let's say a little older, and I think some of the songs were a bit naive, as young people will do, but the meaning and the heart was there, as young people will do. As time went on, we eventually broke up, came back to the States, and I repeated this here, and then the record collectors started picking up the record, and public interest started to be generated again. And before you know it, we're back out there playing again as 65-year-old men, playing music that we played when we were 23. You try that when you're 65. Kind of get you out of breath. Matter of fact, I just played a gig on Friday night in Minneapolis with a great band that backs me up, and we played a fabulous little bar that, about 300 people came out to see us. Standing room only, and people still want to hear the Monks, and more now than ever before. And it puzzles me, astonishes me, and pleases me all at once. It's sort of like extremely delayed recognition.
Boys and girls are joys. To you and me, they're more than toys. She'll be mine forever, only. And what I do will be alright.
Wee-hoo! Wee-hoo! I'll tell you now.
Boys are boys and girls are joys.
I mean, my say.
Boys are boys and girls are joys.
One more time, I'll tell you.
Boys are boys and girls are joys.
Smiles and tears live as one will come a son. Love's a thing that loves to sing.
Love can tame the wild. Love can tame the wild.
Man can cry like a child. Tears don't bring, how they sting. Know your touch, love so much.
Love can tame the wild. Love can tame the wild.
Do you know the taste of silver moon? Soft and blue, I'll kiss you. So much glory, not a story. Roar of star, it's so far.
Love can tame the wild. Love can tame the wild.
Through the years, smile and tears live as one will come a son. Love's a thing that loves to sing.
Love can tame the wild. Love can tame the wild.
Do you know the taste?
soft and blue, I'll kiss you. So much glory, not a story, roar or star, it's so far.
Love can tame the wild, love can tame the wild.
Through the years, smiles and tears, live as one, will come a son. Love's a thing that loves to sing.
Love can tame the wild, love can tame the wild.
It's really great that your music has been discovered, and there's fan interest still out there for you when you get out and play, like recently with the Assassins.
Well, you know, that's a tough item to book because in small communities, especially because, say, the Assassins and the new Monk group that's backing me up. You know, a promoter never knows how they're going to do. You know, if you've got a room that seats 200 people. In Thief River Falls, you might be okay. If you're trying to fill a room that seats 1,000, you're probably going to lose your butt. But I don't know. That's not my business. That's the promoter's. You know, my business is to get up there and do it and deliver. And the band that I'm working with right now is terrific, terrific players. And they're younger people. And so they've got an incredible amount of energy. And I can kind of go along for the ride. I play lead guitar and sing most of the songs, but they're the boat that makes it all float. And they're fabulous players. And I'm having more fun doing this with them because of the energy that they generate. They're just extremely energetic players and very good players. But to go out and do this, you need a venue. I think that's associated with, if you're going to do it in a large manner, you need a venue that's associated with other bands that are way bigger than the Monks are that'll make the draw. But the Monks can go in and surprise the audience now.
Mm-hmm.
And come off looking pretty good.
Your head is out, your bag. We'll be right back.
situation he's in. It's a tight situation. Times are tough.
Currently, you are the mayor of Turtle River, Minnesota. How and when did you get involved with politics on the local level?
Hey, that's a prime local secret. I paid a lot of graft, and I was the assistant mayor for a long time and sat on the city council. And the mayor that we had was a fine fellow who decided to move out of the city. Well, you got to live in the city if you're going to be mayor. So I inherited the job as assistant mayor until the next election. And then after that, it's basically keep running and keep doing the job and stay out of people's hair. I run what I like to call the no-progress city. We don't want city streets. We don't want city septic. We don't want city gas. We don't want street lights. We don't want paved roads. We don't want people moving in. We encourage people to move out. It's a friendly little spot, believe me, but we don't want to grow, and we don't think growth is the answer. From what you look around you in the world, you tell me what you think, but I can tell you growth is not the answer to long term. And you know, it's a losing battle, because growth happens whether you want it or not.
Mm-hmm. Are there any last words that you would like to pass along to the listeners today before we go our separate ways?
Oh, yeah. Live good, be happy, do what pleases you. You do what pleases you first, you're going to be able to please others. Just be happy. As far as I'm concerned, we got one life to live, and do it so in a manner where you can please yourself. Do what you want to do. And if you do that, you're going to also please other people. And be nice, be a good person, be clean, be honest, and life is good.
You're waiting.
You've been listening to the words and music of Gary Berger of the Monks on this very special Pioneer 90.1 Northern Air interview event. A big thank you to Gary Berger for sharing his memories with us today. And don't forget to check out the Monks' 1966 Black Monk Time album, as well as the 2006 documentary on the band called Transatlantic Feedback. We also must give thanks, too, to the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Legacy Grant for making this recording possible. For Pioneer 90.1, I'm Glenn Broggett.